it's a whole new episode.
A whole new week.
It's a whole... Oh, I can't sing.
No, we'll get sued, right? I mean... You keep telling me, which is why you let me sing.
I think it's best...
Yeah.
...that we don't... you know what I mean?
No, it's costly. Can't be costly.
It's just... it's like Quaker Oats. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, that was a campaign for them.
Seriously, get us on the horn, guys. Here we are. We can move some ad space around.
Yeah. Whole 9 Yards not sponsored by Quaker Oats.
Yet. We were just talking about how much we enjoyed oatmeal today, though.
Yeah, we were.
I was.
Yeah, it must be why it was, you know, nice. The little duodecimal guy in my brain had the cards handy.
Oatmeal, we said, wait.
Wait, yeah. I got it right here.
Nice. He's ready to roll.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're back with another episode. Which I think
I realize this, Ray.
What's that?
There are two or three things. The other one is we always could spot a friend. That's the line, that's the opening of the second verse. Welcome back. We always could spot a friend.
Oh.
Yeah.
We could say that, yeah.
Instead of your dreams are
ticket out.
Ticket out.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we say that?
Sure, we'd say anything we want. Don't sing it.
Just can't sing it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's gonna be great. So, hi everybody.
Hi.
And we're enjoying more idioms, and the umbrella for this batch of idioms is something like
important titles.
Important titles.
How's that feel?
That feels pretty good.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, if you don't mind, I'm going to start us off.
Please, be my guest.
I have an odd one. Caught me by storm, as some people say. I don't. Some do.
Caught me by storm.
Yeah.
Let's add that in there. Well, that one makes sense, I think.
And this is Muckety Muck.
Muckety Muck.
Now, I don't remember specifically exactly when I first heard it, but I remember first hearing it and going, what are they saying?
Yeah, it's not a good word.
It's muck. Not a great word.
No.
But you quickly learned that it was like, it's the boss or some... You know, you might call them suits. Sometimes we call people suits.
I would.
Right? Because Ray and I don't have to wear suits.
No,
but
we don't.
There are people, that do wear the suits all the time.
Yeah.
I like a nice suit, but I don't like to have to wear it.
No, I sweat.
Yeah, me too. I don't know how people do that.
I don't. Like walking in a suit.
Oh, man. I would just be drenched by morning.
Seriously, I just got out of my car.
But anyway, Muckety Muck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We won't be those without our suits.
But you recognize it as being like, you know, some boss maybe or something,
the
right?
Big cheese, as we also have, describing idioms with idioms. someone in charge, I guess, or at least has an air of charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. An important, or at least self-important person.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, let me break this down for you because it went a little bit into, you know, it's kind of interesting.
All right.
And has some history that leaves us at a slight conundrum, but it's pretty well defined. It's just it was unexpected to me.
Okay.
First off, you know, you start digging in and you just go muck.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Right. It gives you that like muddy grossness feeling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, muck is 13th century Scandinavian animal dung.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, crud, dirt, crud. Filth.
I love the word crud.
Yeah, it's a good word.
It's a good word.
It almost just comes right out and feels like the word muck.
Yeah.
You know right away what you're talking about.
You got a boot stuck somewhere. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in looking, you could see brand new boots called mucking boots.
Oh, yeah, the muck boots.
Yeah, muck boots, kind of stuff.
Those boots are great.
But you know what you're going to be walking in.
Yeah.
If you need these boots.
You do. Yeah, it's true.
So I kept digging.
All right.
And this one got my goat.
Oh. All right.
Because I went into our whole nine yards library and pulled some books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dictionaries and stuff, yeah. Old English and all that.
The Old English, the Old English.
Yeah.
The Old New English.
All of them.
The New Old English.
And muck means what I just said, the dirt, the filth,
yeah,
the gunk.
Crud.
But there are some people online,
mm-hmm,
who want to tell me that there's a definition for muck, which means to hoard money or wealth in the 1400s.
Yeah. Yeah.
However,
okay,
none of the books and none of the bona fide resources will corroborate that.
Nice.
Huh. I am a little peeved and a little curious as to where they got that.
Yeah, because, but, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I would say muckraking is akin to spewing garbage.
Yeah, but it's mostly in a political,
yeah,
sort of,
yeah,
it's like throwing lies and doing devious stuff in a political theater.
Yeah.
Mostly is what I saw.
True.
So even though this sort of yanks my chain, I'm able to leave it and say I think it's fairly irrelevant anyway because of the other information that I uncovered.
Ooh.
You know, finding it in print is tricky also because the way that people heard it and spelled it, even ourselves, it's seen like I heard it and would think of it as muckety muck.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? Is that M-U-C-K-I-T-Y? M-U-C-K or I-D-Y M-U-C-K.
Mm-hmm. Itty versus itty.
But there are plenty of people who say mucky muck.
That's from Wonder Boy, from Tenacious D. That's what I've heard, mucky muck.
Mucky muck.
Mucky muck.
Or muck-a-muck.
Muck-a-muck.
Which is actually closer to actual reality and truth, but let me get you there. So, but we see it 1856, which is actually late, not late, but it's well into being used a lot where it originated by then, but no one's putting it in print. So yeah, so mid 19th century,
mm-hmm,
sometimes hyphen, sometimes not, all sorts of variations,
yeah,
on it. So that's tricky. The cool part of it is that it's traceable. And its roots are pretty cool.
Yeah.
So a tribe, a Native American tribe up in the Pacific Northwest, and I would imagine, you know, there wasn't that border there, so it was Western Canada, you know, all up there.
Yeah.
The Chinook tribe.
Okay.
Along with French and English settlers, if you like,
mm-hmm,
in that region.
Yeah.
Talking early 19th century.
Okay.
Those people, along with some Hawaiian folk,
yeah,
and Chinese folk, who seems probably were not there by their own choice.
Sure. Yeah.
They all developed this language to speak to each other, a sort of pidgin language,
mm-hmm,
and its base was actually the Chinook language. So I don't know how many words were in this,
mm-hmm,
but there are variations of these. It made me think of Blade Runner, you know,
mm-hmm,
these sort of pidgin languages that maybe have 700-800 words that people,
yeah,
work with to cross, you know, mm-hmm, speak across languages.
Yeah.
At first, I discovered that the Chinook had this word Hayo Makamak, which is M-A-K-A-M-A-K, Makamak.
Okay.
And it meant plenty to eat, but what it really meant was abundance, and you wanted to obtain that status of abundance And some of the characteristics of reaching that status would be to show a blatant disregard for your abundance. And that is to say, you might blatantly throw away food, blankets, things like that. And you'd want people to see you doing that. And then you were a Makamuk, Hiyo Makamuk. Yeah. Now the Hiyo is H-A, Hiyo.
Yeah.
It was, I know you wanted to do it, so I just get it. So yeah, so the Hiyo though is kind of, it's odd and harder for me to get a handle on exactly what that is. Now, the English there would hear it and say it's high, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what they meant it to be. So if you were a high Makamak,
yeah,
then you were one of the upper people who could afford to throw away food.
Yeah, I like that.
But there's another twist to it, because I dug in to see, okay, there were Chinese and Hawaiian people here. So in Hawaii, now, because some of the research would lead you to believe that it really was a Chinook word, okay, but that doesn't really seem to be true, maybe, because Maka is Hawaiian, which means I. So in Hawaii, they have a word, Makamaka, and that's a person whose eyes are always kept high, but can be used to mean they are stuck up or snooty. But this already existed. So the Hawaiians that were there with the Chinook and the English maybe contributed to this more than any of them, right? So Hiyo, I'm still, you know, because I never say hi, muckety muck. But when you research, hi is glued in there
a lot. Stuck
to
it?
Yeah, and I don't really understand why, except that some of the original Chinook Chinese Hawaiian pidgin had this Hiyo, Hiyo Makamak.
Huh.
In any event, it clearly comes straight from here, and then we heard it and spelled it, screwed up the spellings. It's not muck at all. So the people that wanted to say muck is M-U-C-K and meant wealth and hoarding, maybe it did in the 14th century England, and I can't find that anywhere, but it doesn't seem to be how this came to be anyway. It came from this area in this time, early 1800s, and muckamuck turned into mucky muck, muckety muck, however we bastardize it. But it meant that from then, and that is how a bill becomes a law.
They want to be able to have an abundance to be able to throw away and have you watch. That's an interesting, there's like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, you can understand that kind of early status,
sure,
right?
It's just that's nice. That right. Was fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see it. Yeah, nice.
I like that one.
Sweet.
So, what the hell is it? I had people.
We're
names,
doing
a
title. Important titles?
Important titles.
Yeah. Big wig.
Biggity big.
The big wig.
Wig.
No small wigs.
No.
Only big wigs.
All right.
And we're kind of, all these idioms are sort of all leaning in the direction of someone in charge or a person of consequence, I guess, is what folks would say.
Oh.
What?
Consequence.
You know. Isn't that the word?
I guess.
A person of means? How's that? Importance?
You were just being colorful.
I thought.
And I'm good with
okay.
it. I just took a minute to digest that.
Sweet. Bigwig. Let's dive in.
Biggity big.
Bigwig. The OED says that the word for hairpiece, periwig, came into the English language in the 1500s. The Gramophobia blog has the term bigwig first recorded in 1703 in a weekly journal, The English Spy. Be unto him ever ready to promote his wishes against dun or don, knob or bigwig, So may you never want a bumper of bishop. So may you never want, yeah, bumper of bishop.
1703. I would have thought earlier, but go ahead.
Well, the bigwig phrase, the idiom.
Yeah.
Yeah. The idea of it, and it predates the use of the phrase, obviously, as they do. Bumper of bishop, though. That's pretty cool. I've looked up bishop. Bishop is a mixture of wine and water topped with a roasted orange.
Wait, it's bishop with F's or a P?
With a P? What?
Bishop.
Yeah, bishop. I've heard the bit of the bishop. I've heard that before, meaning a drink.
All right, I might want to make that later.
A mixture of wine and water topped with a roasted orange.
I'm going to need an orange.
Yeah, you got to roast it then, too.
I got a roaster.
Oh, nice. Yeah, but, you know, why the bigwig? The bigwig really comes directly from large wigs that distinguished folks used to wear.
Distinguished.
Person of consequence.
Just any person that you see on the street.
Well, that's how it came to be, eventually. But it started, reportedly, in France with Louis XIII in the 1600s.
Oh.
He went bald and essentially started wearing periwigs. And then by the middle of that century, 1650s, because the king's doing it, like, you know, fashion was that. So wigs were, you know, just on all the nobility or anyone that felt they were of consequence, and probably folk of the lower class trying to seem up, you know, trying to climb the social ladder.
Here again, it would be sweaty, don't you think?
Oh yeah, are you kidding me? That's the rub. Like, these wigs were,
what were they made out of?
Expensive, and like, to keep them like fresh or whatever. I mean, they're made out of hair. Some of them made out of other stuff, but like, they had like scaffolding and stuff is what they describe it as, almost like a corset, like truss or something. Like, they had these big contraptions that sort of, because I mean, the wigs they're odd when you look at the hairstyles. Like, they're pointy and tent like. You know, some of them are like the Marie Antoinette thing is like a big, giant, elliptical spheroid. What would you call that?
I don't know how you keep that on your head.
But they had these, like, scaffoldings. Like, literally, they, like, strapped them to you. They built these things to hold these wigs.
I'm not doing that.
No. But that's why the literal bigwig meant you could afford to, you know, maintain an expensive and extravagant
the bigger the
fake
wig,
hairpiece.
The more money you have.
Yeah, essentially.
What about the doorways?
Right? They're so small. But that's where it kind of grows and grows and grows. But it started with, Louis XIII, the King of France.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I see. I thought it might be in, like, the British Parliament. Or the courts.
Well, it goes, that's the kind of what it goes to. It ends up being more judgy and more judgy. The quote, there's an actual quote from 1781. G. Selwyn, just a letter in a historical manuscript collection, says, a new point of discussion for the lawyers, for our bigwigs, for their lordships. And the bigwigs that he's referring to are judges, essentially. So yes, it does become more of a parliamentary, judgy, what word am I want to use? Why am I saying judgy?
Judicial.
Thank you. Sense. The folks of authority wear them, not nobility necessarily. I mean, not that we don't treat politicians like they're freaking. Anyway, sorry. I have to cut that out.
Yeah. So it went off the rails.
Yeah, it'll go on you.
It'll get cool on you.
But yeah, that like you said, that then it becomes the judiciary or the parliaments, things like that, where the big, they adopt the wigs. And that's true here. I mean, in Salem and things like that, back in the day, the Puritans, I mean, not that they didn't come directly from there. So they kept the traditions of wearing those weird powdered wigs and stuff.
But isn't it true that even today, am I crazy? Like British Parliament, they wear them,
yeah,
right?
I believe so.
I'm sure they have them a lot lighter and maybe synthetic so that they don't, like, you know, breathe or something. I don't know.
I mean, this is just me throwing stuff out there, but, you know, the nobility and things, they weren't the healthiest people because of the decisions they made about breeding and things like that. So like a lot of those fashion things, which are funny to me, like the wigs and like the pale makeups and stuff, like they were just trying to cover up their unhealthiness, and they became like fashion trends. Yeah, I don't know. That was just an aside. Yeah, Big Wig is a big wig, and they had big wigs, and they were big wigs.
All right. So status. All boils down to status.
I mean, it boils down to vanity, if you really want to get down to it. He went bald.
Because of the bald.
And he wanted to wear wigs. Perhaps
the bald started something that turned into status. He didn't mean to make it status.
He didn't. No. I mean, I think he was just ashamed of his baldness. But maybe he was like, screw it. I like being bald. I want to wear a bunch of fancy wigs. Because, I mean, that's also fun.
Now the world is my oyster.
I do enjoy trying on wigs.
Fun. Sure, it's fun. Yeah. You get a good, crazy look at yourself. Hey, check
look
out
at me.
Red hair.
I got a blue thing going on.
Now I got green hair. Yeah. Yeah.
But they're itchy. You got to wear a wig cap.
I don't think they're all itchy.
Yeah, you
got to
wear a wig cap.
Those,
well, yeah. I mean, these ones, I you know what? I didn't look up specifically what they were made from. But the word scaffolding was in there.
Yeah,
like the hair. I mean,
right.
It's I'm
like
assuming
chicken
it's,
wire
yeah.
built
yeah,
like a whole,
like a whole, yeah, like a Rose Bowl parade float.
Well, at least that would be lighter. It would be hollow, but then I still think it would fall over.
Oh man, it'd be so sweaty.
Sure, let me put a little fan up in there. Those little electric.
The 1600s. We're just gonna.
Yeah, it takes you know.
Ingenuity.
Two A cells.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. All right.
Big wigs have had big wigs.
So let's, I got nothing.
Yeah, me neither. Just here's some ads.
Here's the ads.
Bam, 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 bam.
Wait, that's so sucked so much. So wait.
What?
All right, so, God, I still got nothing though. Oh. I'm thinking something would come to
I was
you.
Fine with how it went. But.
All right, I'll just be there.
Support Whole Nine Yards and make your life easier with Instacart. Online grocery shopping made simple. Instacart connects you with personal shoppers in your area to shop and deliver groceries from your favorite stores in a single order. Products you love from local stores, hand-selected based on your preferences. Many items may be delivered in as little as an hour. Instacart helps to save you money on your favorite items and recommends new products that you might also love. Instacart, the most convenient way to shop. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by the Roberto Clemente Museum. Located in a restored engine house in Pittsburgh's revitalized Lawrenceville neighborhood, the Clemente Museum is a showcase of the largest exhibited collection of baseball artifacts, works of art, literature, photographs, and memorabilia related to Roberto Clemente and his life in baseball. Shop the store for clothing and other items featuring the iconic 21 logo and purchase tour tickets for the museum at ClementeMuseum.com. Enter promo code W9Y21 for a 10% discount on hats and tees. That's ClementeMuseum.com, promo code W9Y21. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's BigScienceMusic.com.
All right, so hi, we have returned.
We're back from our ad break.
And we're still on the guys or women's in charge people names.
Yeah, important nicknames, I guess, yeah. Is what we're kind of driving towards.
Yeah. Yeah. Titles.
Right, it's titles.
Yeah, about that.
We got it. We found
got
it.
Got it.
Found it.
Am I up?
You are, I think, if you'd like to be.
Yeah, I can, and I'll tell you what.
Okay.
This is simple. It's not incredibly complex. It's got a couple vagaries, though, for me. However, it seems to have an immediate, indisputed root. Undisputed?
Well, undisputed would mean that it hasn't been beaten, that it has no contest.
And indisputed, something else?
Indisputed makes me
it's just
feel
not
like
a word.
No,
you know what? That's not a word. Here's mine, though.
Great.
Let me enjoy it unto
let's
you.
Get back on the rails.
Honcho, head honcho.
Head honcho.
Yeah.
Gotta love the alliteration.
Well, here's the thing. So this one's laying there all this time. We say it. You probably say it, right?
Yeah, he's the head honcho over there.
Yeah.
She. He's the head honcho over there.
You say it.
I've said it, I'm sure.
Or you hear it.
I've heard
people
it.
People say
for
it.
Sure.
You take it in.
Yeah.
But never did this connect to me what I'm about to connect for you.
Okay. Am I going to be shocked?
No.
Oh, okay.
But, and maybe you'll go, yeah, of course.
Oh.
That's what I always thought. Mm. But I didn't give it any thought, but it didn't strike. Anyway, let's just take it. There's a fellow, this fellow Ernest O. Norquist.
Okay.
Let's call him Ernie O.
Ernie O.
And Ernie was an army guy in the 40s. So, you know, World War II there. So Ernie, he's a prisoner of war.
Oh.
And I'm figuring by the Japanese.
Okay.
So he keeps a diary of sorts on whatever he could find to write on. And eventually it wasn't published somehow until 1989. It must have been some family infighting, or they couldn't find all this. I don't know what. Or maybe he didn't want it published.
We're missing a page. We got to get it full if we're going to publish it.
There's a gum wrapper. Or maybe he passed. Maybe he didn't want it to be published, and then the family.
Like, we'll respect his wishes.
Remember, like the dude from Taurus, he didn't want to sue Led Zeppelin, but as soon as he was dead.
Oh, man, yeah, the family.
The family was like, we're suing him.
Yeah.
So it might have been something like that.
Yeah.
So this Norquist fellow talked about honchos. He said, this honcho comes around and says, asks, Supu Joto, which meant, is the soup good?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to answer, hi, or you get hit. So, he said the soup was, of course, not good.
Right.
But
the soup was not good.
The soup. But you had to lie
or
take a punishment.
Yeah.
So my point is about Ernie. He documented honcho early on there, early 40s, 1940s. We don't see it in print until 1947. And when we see it in print, it's H-O-N-C-H-O. And it always continues to mean the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the person in charge, head honcho, main person, you know. I take it from research that it didn't really start to come into American vernacular until the 60s for some reason. And I found a thing of Goldwater using it. But I don't know if it was propagated in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I mean, many times we see that a thing laying there for decades.
Yeah.
But in this case, it was just 2 decades, and exactly what this is and why it is what it is, there's the long and there's the short, and there's the long and the short, but there's just really one thing.
Yeah.
Except specific definition. This one always burns me, and even when I have someone who speaks the specific language, I can ask them, and if I have 3 people that speak that language, I'll get 3 different answers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our Oxford English Dictionary will say han, H-A-N, is a Japanese word meaning squad, and cho meaning head or chief. So honcho was the head of the squad.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't like to just take one definition of anything without double checking. You know, true journalism, Ray, you know
look.
What I mean?
Yeah, got to keep digging.
And I am unable to independently come up with that definition myself, which is befuddling.
Yeah.
I find Han meaning clan.
Okay.
And meaning a lot of things. Also, and this is H-A-N, mm-hmm. you know, lord, feudal lord, things like this. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I'm close enough.
Yeah.
Cho, I can't find that meaning leader. I find it meaning super. I find C-H-O-U meaning super or meaning butterfly, but not what the Oxford English Dictionary says. Yeah, leader of the clan. Yeah. So I have to just go ahead and accept that the OED knows something that I can't find and is right. And so our buddy Ernie, prisoner of war, mm-hmm. he would just hear the soldiers talk about the honcho mm-hmm. coming around, mm-hmm. and he took it up, he wrote it down. And I would imagine that many American soldiers in World War II heard this as well, mm-hmm. As you know, in the Japanese theater.
Yeah.
So why didn't it splash into, you know, some of those journalists would have come back and become writers and newspaper journalists in the States and everything. Mm-hmm. Why didn't it get in from the late 40s? Why didn't we start hearing that? Mm. Why wait till the 60s? But till it really exploded, I don't know. But it's clear cut, except for my frustration with being able to double check the definition.
Right. The OED doesn't always give you answers. It's like, here it is. There's no information besides that.
Yeah. So honcho, you know, it's I see it as one word, yeah. in Japanese but derived from two Japanese words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice.
But yeah, that's what I have.
Sweet.
Head honcho.
Yeah.
But we spell it with the O.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, right. Nice.
You know, it's concise.
I too have a concise, but I found it to be interesting, unexpected, I guess. I didn't, you know, I don't know.
I like that.
The idiom is mogul. Word is mogul.
The idiom is mogul.
Yes. And this one is more of a powerful, wealthy individual, I guess, than a person of, you know. They all imply wealth, I guess.
Well, they do, but you know what? I think of mogul as a somewhat of a maybe has a lot of arms in businesses. Maybe has a lot of mm-hmm. businesses.
I hear what you're saying.
More specifically,
yeah,
I think of it as wealth as much as I do as that. And you know they're rich because of the businesses, mm-hmm. but you think of the mogul, and at least in my brain, as they're the business. They reach out, they open. You know what I mean?
Almost like they were in charge of kind of an empire.
Yes, that's the word I was groping for.
Yeah,
still haven't found what I'm groping for.
In that. Is kind of where we're headed. Oh. The word mogul, originally, it comes from Mongol, a person of Mongolian descent. And in this context of which we use it, it refers to the Mughal Empire, M-U-G-H-A-L, which is the Persian or Arabic word for Mongol. In this empire ruled the subcontinent between 1526 and 1857.
Could you be a Mongolian mogul?
Yeah, exactly.
Or is that redundant?
I think it's redundant, yeah. Well, the thing, see, this is where this, I'm just going to keep, but yes.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
No, yeah.
Because it is, it's, anyway. yeah, what did I say, 1857 was when the British Raj, you know, came over and decided to colonize India, essentially.
Yeah.
But
it's not redundant. You can maybe be a Mongolian mogul.
Yeah.
But it isn't redundant.
No.
Because a Mongolian isn't necessarily a mogul. It's
right.
Just a person.
Specifically.
Who lives in Mongolia.
Right. Right, exactly. It was different tribes of people coming together in the Mongolian region of Asia. that called themselves the Mongolians, essentially. They claim a heritage dating back to Genghis Khan, who I think is postulated to be like the father of most of the world.
Yeah.
Because of his escapades. Yeah, apparently, his lineage is vast.
I think they call them more conquests than escapades.
Right, conquests, yes. But apparently his bloodline is rich. But that's just a sidebar.
Yeah, I like sidebars.
Yeah.
My childhood Risk game playing, you know, so Mongolia is like northern China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It becomes that.
Yeah.
We're going back to where it's just like the Indian subcontinent is what we're calling it.
Okay.
You're fine. but these, what Persians, Arabic language for Mongol, Mogul, they were very rich and very powerful. And they were so successful in things like that, they acquired vast, vast riches, which the Taj Mahal is one of the payoffs of, what am I say? The gifts of the Mongol Empire.
But this is southern China. Am I remembering where Risk had Mongolia located? Because you'd be on the southern border of China for what you're describing.
It was, I mean, but the you know, the borders changed over time.
Yeah, but still.
These are things that are, you know.
I don't know.
In the 1560s.
I think I'm screwed up, but go ahead.
Maybe. I mean, we're closer to India, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still southern China or southeast China.
Yes.
Go ahead.
It's fine. So because they were so rich and just powerful that the folks would refer to any rich and powerful people as mogul, like we would essentially call someone a Rockefeller or a Bill Gates. Yeah.
So it just got generified.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, oh, this is like I said, like we, like in America, we would say, that guy's a Rockefeller, meaning you're a rich person who was.
I mean, we know your name isn't Rockefeller.
Right. Yeah. So they used it the same way of mogul, meaning just a rich person stand in. And then that came to us via their conquest by the British Raj in 1857.
Back to that.
Yeah. But you made an interesting point saying many arms and many things. Having an undertone to that of the Mogul, which is interesting because the Mongolian Empire was, or the Mogul Empire, it just kind of had interesting forms of, not interesting forms of government, but very progressive, I guess, for the time. They didn't try to force religions on people or things like that. They were open to their many tribes, and they allowed those tribes to kind of take a seat at the table and really had more prosperity and things like that because of the way they governed. And through taxes.
Yeah, do what you want. Don't hurt anybody, right. And make sure you pay your taxes.
Basically.
And we'll all be fine.
It sounded like it was a more progressive empire, if an empirical system can be progressive.
I mean, you know, everything in its time.
Right, yeah. But yeah, that I did not know what that was, and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. So it's essentially a Persian Rockefeller.
Persian Rockefeller.
Yeah, as a mogul.
Persia feller, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The closing is, at its heart, the word mogul is an English corruption of mogul or mogul, which is the Persian or Arabic word for Mongol. In summation.
Ta-da!
I just added some more color in there.
Yeah, no, that's a good button.
It was interesting, though. That was cool.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that, and yet it's laying right there. It's one letter away from Mongol.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, the, like I said, Persian / Arabic for Mongol is Mughal. Again, I'm saying Mughal because it's Mughal, but it may be Mogul.
It's a muckety muck Mogul.
Yeah. So we've come to the end of our bigwigs.
Yeah, it's a foggy mountain breakdown up in here. So I like it, though.
Yeah, it keeps us off the streets.
Yeah. I wanted to say, though, because we didn't.
Nope, definitely didn't.
Please send us in comments and criticisms, mostly comments. And it's sort of, you know, maybe ideas for topics or more edification for us to...
Don't edify me.
Whole Nine Yards Pod. Right? So I set you up.
You did. I was like, no, don't edify me. It doesn't help.
Drifting off.
Whole Nine Yards Pod.
Nine is a number.
Nine is a number.
And yeah, like us on the Facebook, which is Whole Nine Yards Podcast, or on the Instagram, and get in touch with us there.
Yeah.
And everything's going to be great.
Yeah.
Until then, no, it's great now.
It's great always.
Yeah.
Later.
I mean, all time
later
is now.
So
it's going to be great. It's
exactly.
Ooh, man. I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
Almost forgot.
And we're not idioms.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyyou@wholenineyards.org. That's heyyou@wholenineyards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.